Okay, so let's get started. So today is sort of a, I don't know, kind of a lame duck lecture or something. Like, I feel like Monday I lectured on everything through what I'm going to actually cover on the midterm. And Friday I'm going to lecture on stuff that's going to be after the midterm, for stuff that's going to be after the midterm. So today there's some loose ends that I want to clean up, and I want to talk a little bit about the homework. And like do an example and stuff, and so, it's stuff that you won't be tested on. But mostly, I wanted to talk a little bit about the homework. I feel like this is the first homework that's really been like a statistics homework. So I wanted to just talk about like the statistics behind what we're doing, apart from just the programming coding part. Okay, but yeah. Through Monday's lecture, yeah, not so today's lecture will not be on the midterm. Okay, anything other questions? Okay, so this is really the question that the homework is trying to think about, is how would we compare the web cache data to what we would expect, and what we would expect is itself a little bit maybe ambiguous, right? So what we should, I think, expect is that, so what our idea is that perhaps the web cache data is uniform, that the times of the updates are sort of random. Like, I sort of gave some examples of like x coordinates of raindrops or email coming into an account where, in a world where people are awake for 24 hours a day and could send emails at any time. Something like that, right? Sort of equally likely to happen at any time. So that's what this blue line is supposed to represent. If it were completely uniform, then you would be equally likely to have these events, these updates at any time. And for this particular, this is for site 8, which I selected because it's a fairly unusual one. It had a bunch of updates up until like almost time 200, and then nothing. Okay, so that's pretty different than uniformly distributed between 0 and 720. So whatever we do ought to identify this one as being weird, right? So that's number 8. If you want to check that against whatever code you're working on, you can be pretty sure that number 8's going to be weird. So another thing we could do, so hey, a histogram, that's one way of doing it. But, if it's sort of like, if it was not so weird and it was kind of close to that horizontal line, then you might think that you might still have a question, right? You might question whether or not it really looks like what you'd expect from uniform data. Okay, so here's another way. If you compare quantiles, so the times 0 to 720, and again, the blue line represents what you should expect if it's completely uniform. So the quantiles would then sort of match up, that you get updates equally spaced. And that's not happening here. You're getting a lot of updates really soon in the beginning, and then nothing. So the same data, right? So we have this is what it would look like for a quantile plot if you had a lot of updates at the very beginning and then nothing. Okay. So what this means is like the 0.5 quantile is the median. So the median of the data is like around 50 or something. So that's sort of what that represents. So I guess if you look back at that should match up, right? I'm claiming the median is somewhere around 50. And, maybe that's true. The median is somewhere in here. Half the points are in here. I think there are 14 points. So yeah, I think, right, these double height ones represent 2 points. This one represents 1 point. So the median should be right here. 7 on each side is right around there. So right around 50 or maybe a little bit more. Okay? So that sort of matches up with how we would, what we'd, yeah. Anyway, I'm just trying to show you the relationship between this plot and the histogram. Okay, again, this is pretty wildly different from what it would be if it were truly uniform. If it's truly uniform, it ought to follow that blue line fairly closely. Okay. This is a quantile plot. So this is plotting times on a scale of 0 to 1, meaning like, yeah. So in this case, there are, 14 points. So it's plotting the them at each, at 1/14th intervals, right? These distances on the x-axis are 1/14th, and then the y-values are just whatever the y-values are. And you notice that this is a banked plot, right? So this is banked to be roughly 45 degrees, which makes it as close to a line as it can. But that is a little bit misleading for this particular data. If the point of the data is to see whether or not it looks like a line, maybe this is not the right plot, because it only goes up to about 200. In reality, maybe we should have it shoot all the way up to 720, and then it would, you know, be something like this. Okay, that's an undesirable feature for a plot in general. I think the reason why a plot like this is good is that we can see if it's at least uniform over this interval, right? If we didn't bank it and all the whole plot was like in some region like this, it would be kind of hard to see if the points fall in a line. These, I think you can, you know, so the fact that these themselves do not follow a line is an indication that it's not even uniform in the first, you know, 200 steps or whatever, first 200 time intervals. Okay, so that's why I left it banked. It still tells us something about, you know, whether or not it's uniform in this first part. And so you're sort of up to your observational skills to recognize that this axis is not 0 to 720. So there's something going on there too. Okay, so for 200. The y-axis is the times, the update times. So in theory, they could be 0 to 720. For this particular data set, if we look at the, you know, they're all less than 200, right? The time interval that the website was observed over is 0 to 720. But in fact, the website was only updated in the first 200 time intervals and not after that. The x-axis here, or on the other one? Yeah. On the other one, is 0 to 1. So these distances are 1/14th, because they're 14 points. So this is 200 random uniforms. So this is done. So your homework looks at quantiles, like the 0.01 quantiles, or they're really the percentiles, because it's like 0.01 is the first percentile, second percentile, third percentile, so forth. And so in the plots that you're making, you're not actually displaying all the data, right? You're displaying selected quantiles. So if like there are 300 data points and you're doing the first percentile, second percentile, third percentile, your values along this axis would be like every third data point. Does that make sense? So if you have 300 data points, just hypothetically, the first percentile is equal to the third value, sorted, right? The third from the smallest. Okay? So if for your plot, that's what you're doing, is that on the x-axis, you're doing 0.01, 0.02, 0.03, 0.04, so forth. So then the first percentile corresponds to the third value. You wouldn't find it like that. You would use the quantile function to find all of them to figure out which values. So, you know, you're going to find the 0.01 quantile, the 0.02 quantile, the 0.03 quantile of the data, and plot that against the raw numbers 0.01, 0.02, 0.03, 0.04 on this axis. Okay, so these are uniform quantiles along there. These are simulated random uniform quantiles, and they should roughly match up, right? Because if it's uniform, then roughly you should get, you know, you should actually get 1% of the values between 0 and 0.01. And then another 1% of the values between 0.01 and 0.02. And that's what would make it on a line, is if those were actually true. If the third value is actually 0.01, then that's what it's going to make it exactly on a line. If you have 300 random values, then the third value should be at 0.01. So if it really is uniform, it should be pretty close, but not exact. Okay. Yeah. So for the for that data from the eighth website, it's very far from that. Okay. So that's that. I showed you this in a previous lecture, a writing functions lecture, what the quantile plot looks like for the normal curve. So this is random. Oh, that's not uniform. It's random normal. Sorry, it's mislabeled. This is random normal data. And let's just think about why it's shaped like this for a second. It's shaped like this because for the normal curve, you get lots of points in the middle, right? So lots of points in the middle means that, for example, you should expect, you know, this is 20% of the data, right? So 20% of the points are going to be between these two values. They have to be equally spaced on the y-axis, right? So 20% of the points are going to be in there, and 20% of the points, the middle 20% of the points on the normal curve are pretty close together. So it's like if you took an area of 20% here, that 20% has to be kind of crammed in between those points. So that the range necessary to get 20% in here is much smaller than the range necessary to get 20% out here, right? 20% of the points down there is like, you know, that range is going to be much bigger, right? So that range is like that range. So 20% here means that I'm going all the way from here to here. So it's this distance that corresponds to this distance. That makes sense? This distance here is smaller. 20% of all the values are crammed into a relatively small distance here. Small distance here, 20% of the values here. Okay. So again, everything's equally, you know, everything's equally or evenly distributed here. It's just literally a sequence of evenly distributed values. But whatever happens here is whatever happens here. It might be uniform, it might not. Okay? Questions about that? So this is often used as a visual way of trying to establish whether or not data follows a certain distribution. And what we're doing for all these things is to compare to uniform quantiles to see if the data that we're looking at follows the uniform distribution. There are quantile plots you can do for any distribution. So if you did a quantile plot for the normal, you would be doing expected quantiles here versus just, you know, empirical or data quantiles here. And in that plot, you should get a straight line. If you're using the expected quantiles here and the data is really normal, then it should look like a line for that. But everything we're doing is comparing to uniform, everything we're doing for this homework. Okay, but just as a side statistics lesson, a frequent question that statisticians ask is, does the data look like the normal curve? And you can do the same thing as we're doing. It's just that you'd compare it to normal quantiles rather than uniform quantiles. Yeah. For normal quantiles? So for normal quantiles, what you do is you chop this up. Like if you want to do 0.01 quantiles again, you chop the curve up so that you get blocks of size 1%, and these values are the values that you would put. So they're going to be, you know, really close together in the middle, farther apart here. So this one, they're all equally spaced. So they would not be equally spaced. That's right. They wouldn't be equally spaced. You wouldn't expect them to be, right? If you do random normals, you expect there to be, like if I took 100 random normals, you kind of expect that there are going to be a bunch in the middle that are very close together, and then out of this, at the sides, they're going to be maybe farther apart. Okay, and so that's exactly what you try to mimic with the normal quantiles. Yeah. Yeah. If the x-axis is normal quantiles and the data is normal, then you should still get a straight line, right? You'd be plotting these values every, you know, 1/100th area along here versus whatever the data is. Yeah. So that's a, you know, as a statistics lesson, that's kind of a more common thing, I would say, is that people are curious about does the data follow the normal curve, is a pretty frequent statistics question. Okay, so what are we doing? One experiment I'll think of as having some number n, which is the number of changes for one particular website. Like, you know, the eighth one had 14 changes. So then generate 14 random locations of possible changes according to the uniform, right? Uniform distribution. And you could do that either using runif or the sample function. Either way that makes sense for you is okay with me. And then compute the statistics from max diff. This is actually a known thing, a studied thing in statistics. It's called the Kolmogorov-Smirnov statistic, and I don't expect you to certainly remember that. It's semi-obscure, but in that you might not. Has anyone seen that before? Kolmogorov-Smirnov statistic? Anyone? Maybe one or two people? Okay. So what it's doing is it's attempting to see, to have some measure of how far from a line you are, right? Like we can look at it and say, oh, it kind of looks like it's close to a line, or maybe not. But this is a way of having a measurement on that plot that tells us how far it is. And the measurement that it's taking is it's taking the maximum difference from the line and the points. So let me go to the next slide just to show you what that looks like. So if the green line represents what you expect, then it's looking at differences between what we do from the data, the empirical result, and so it's looking to see where is that the biggest. Maybe it's the biggest like here, actually, right? The biggest difference between the line and the point that what you get from the data. Okay, so it's taking that distance. So if you always stay pretty close to the line, then you know you argue that the data looks pretty normal, and you have this problem then, like how big would you expect things to be just randomly, right? Like if you took random uniforms, sometimes you're going to get relatively bigger maximum differences. Sometimes you're going to get smaller ones. How big is too big? At what point do we decide that this really doesn't look like it follows the uniform distribution? Okay, so that's where the simulation comes in. We do this, so this is like one single experiment to generate random numbers and calculate this Kolmogorov-Smirnov, I guess it's Kolmogorov, I guess, Kolmogorov statistic, Kolmogorov-Smirnov statistic. And that's what MaxDiff does, is it calculates that. And so we do that over and over again. We get a MaxDiff for each simulated data set. And so we compute that every time. And then we compare the one we got for our data to the B simulated values. And what we're doing is with B is 1,000. So maybe I should have called the argument B. It's a commonly used number. It's N in your functions, the way I've written them. Okay, but we use the default of 1,000, and more would be fine too, but this is a pretty good large number. Okay, so then the question is the one that we got for our data, is this difference we got for our data set kind of in the mix of all the other ones that were from the random uniforms, or is it far away from them? So that's why we look at the ranks. We rank the statistic that we got compared to all the random ones. And if it's bigger than all of them, right? If this max diff is bigger than all the max diffs for all those random ones, that's a pretty strong indication that, you know, it's not the same as uniform data, right? Out of all the 1,000 ones, none of those 1,000 ones managed to get as far away from the line as the data. If ours is the rank of 1,000 or 1,001 maybe. If it's sort of in the middle, then, you know, it looks like it's fine. There's a judgment call. So if you take a statistics class, you are familiar with the term p-value. Well, this is a simulated p-value. So if you get a value of the statistic which is in the tail where there's like if the rank that you end up with is like 0.95 or more, essentially, like meaning that it's bigger than 95% or more of the simulated values, that's an indication that this is pretty rare. So if you did do simulated data, and so if this website was updating just randomly, only about 5% of the time would it manage to get a maximum difference as big as the one that we are observing. So that's an indication that it's unusual, at least. It's not crazy wildly unusual, maybe, if it's like, you know, bigger than 96% of them. Some of the thousand manage to get bigger differences, but it's at least unusual, right? So there's a little bit of a judgment call here. P-value less than 5% is what's usually used as a cutoff point. So that means if it's bigger than 95% of the other, if the one that we're looking at, if the website we're actually looking at that we really have data for, if it's bigger than 95% of the simulated ones, that would correspond to a p-value of less than 5%. If that doesn't resonate with anything that you've learned before, then, you know, it's not really important. But basically, I think you should have the idea that extreme is extreme, right? If it's bigger than all or nearly all of them, that's an indication that it's probably not just random. Okay, questions about any of that? Okay, so part of the reason why, so we mostly are doing programming in here, but there are a few topics that you won't encounter, I think, in other classes, because it's not really natural to do simulation in other statistics classes, certainly not in 134, 135, and you might find these ideas in one of the 150 level classes somewhere, but it's a little bit more natural to do it in a programming class where, you know, this is the way that you would really implement it if you wanted to do something with simulation. It's a fairly common thing that working statisticians use as a tool. So part of the justification or the reason for doing simulation that I sort of talked about at the beginning was that this is something you want to do if it's difficult to find like theoretical answers. So this maximum difference thing, it's very difficult to imagine how you would think about the theoretical distribution of the maximum difference for uniforms. It's a pretty challenging statistics problem, theoretically. But the simulation is not too bad, right? So this is exactly the kind of situation that a statistician would sort of think about it for a while with pencil and paper and then be like, oh, I'm just going to do a simulation, okay? Pretty common idea. I mentioned before this general set of things that statisticians do are called Monte Carlo methods, which are essentially to, you know, do simulations, do random things that can provide pretty good answers. A couple more things I want to say about the homework. There are a couple things that might bother you. The sim data function is not used later, okay? You could use it later, but you'd have to change it a little bit. It takes, that sim data function takes n as an argument, where n is the nth value in the which OK vector. But sim max diff takes as an argument x, which is a vector from cache 500, one of the which OK vectors still, but takes it as a vector as opposed to an index. So sim data takes an index, and sim max diff takes x the vector. So there's no way to get back the index once you have in sim max diff. Once you take the argument, which is the vector itself, you can't really get back the index, and you'd need the index to use the sim data function. If you feel like rewriting that little bit, you can. You could make sim max diff take as an argument the n value, and then pass it along to the sim data function. If you feel like it, I think it's probably, you know, the sim data function is pretty quick. I think probably it's just you do it like one or two lines or something. So basically, you can just stick that one or two lines in your sim max diff function, and it'll work. The sim data function generates the simulated data, and you might as well just do that in that sim max diff function, I think. So anyway, there's that. And another thing that might be a little bit confusing is that really I probably should have written hist ranks with an argument n that could be passed along to the simmax diff. So the argument n would be the number of simulations to do. It's set as a default, so it should totally run, but because the simmax, because the hist ranks function doesn't have an argument n that you can change, you're sort of required to use the default value of 1,000 every time you run simmax diff. So a better, more general way to write it would have been to pass, to make an argument n for hist ranks that would be passed on to simmax diff, but I didn't do it that way. So anyway, we for our homework, we're only using n as 1,000 anyway. But if you ever wanted to do something else, or you know, if you're curious about what it would look like with 10,000 or 100,000 iterations, you could change that little bit of code and do it. Okay, any questions about that? Any questions about the homework, what we're doing, the logic of it? Yeah. Yeah, so I identify some that seem like they don't. Identify some that seem like they probably do. Well, yeah. So you for a website that you can choose, you compare that to the simulated ones. And then do it for all of them, and then see like, okay, which ones are look pretty good, which ones look pretty bad. There will be some that are really quite bad. Like number 8, I'll just tell you, is if you look at the what happens for that one, you get something that's quite, you know, it's just the biggest. It has the biggest max diff compared to the any 1,000 that you're going to make. Okay, so. Any other questions, comments? Yeah?
So are we just assuming that the chaos statistic is like asymptotically normal? And that's what we're using?
No, we're not using theoretical distribution at all. We're just doing it empirically. We're getting 1,000 simulated values of the chaos statistic based on actual random uniforms and then comparing ours to those. So it might be that it's normal, but it might not. And so we're not relying on that at all. Yeah. It's a nice thing about simulation is you don't really have to make assumptions of normality and stuff like that, because you're just going to use this empirical distribution of the simulated data anyway. So another question? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't really care about the ones you don't care what the ranks are for the simulated ones. All you care about is the rank of the real data compared to all the rest. So I think I said in that that the output of that function should be just a single rank, right? Yeah. You could use the rank function for it. That's fine. There are other ways to do it. You don't have to use the rank function. You can check to see how many it's bigger than is equivalent. So, yeah.
So the rank function, when you just like input whatever arguments, does it automatically go from like 1 to n plus 1, or do you have to specify it to go to n plus 1?
No, it'll go from however many. Well, it depends on how you use it, but the way that I would... I think probably the way that you would naturally use it, you're going to get something that's correct, which is between 1 and n plus 1. So equivalent way to do it is you have some number, right? The value from the max diff value from the one data set that you looked at, or the one column, like 8, the 8th one. So you have the max diff from that one. It's just a number. And you have a vector, 1,000 long, of a bunch of numbers, and what you want to know is how many values in that vector is the max diff for your website bigger than. So that's something that I think you should all be able to do. you have a number, you have a vector of numbers, and you want to know how many numbers in that vector are smaller than that one number, right? So that's something I think you should be able to do without using any functions. But, you know, okay? But you can use the rank function, too. It'll do the same thing. Any other questions? Okay. So I think there are a couple more things I want to talk about, I think, in R, and then I'll come back to PowerPoint. So I just thought I'd show you this is sort of to generate that histogram. So I just want to illustrate that there are sort of alternatives. What we're doing in this homework is looking at this max diff thing, using the quantile plot, looking at the difference between what we expect and what actually happens. If I were just kind of, you know, looking at some data and wanted to see whether or not the data followed the uniform distribution, I might do this, right? I might just do some of these steps. So I'll just walk you through, like, what I would do if I were just exploring the 8th website and I wondered whether or not I don't have this. Let's see. Okay. Okay. So, right, I just might look at a histogram, and if I looked at that as my first histogram, I don't like that histogram. So then I tend to like to have more breaks. So that's what it looks like if you do it with more breaks. And then I recognize that, in general, they go up to 720, right? So I put my xlim as 0 to 720. And I like looking at plots of density rather than counts in general. So I set it with density. So that's what it looks like as a histogram, you know, with that. And I'm not really trying to make it look pretty. I'm not dealing with the x label and the title and all that kind of stuff. I just sort of, this is what I would do if I were exploring. And then I might think, okay, well, how many are there? There are 14 values. And so then I wrote this function to do something in general to sort of explore, to make a histogram and kind of compare it to the uniform. So I'll just walk you through this. So this is the first line. So I'm setting it with a argument n, which is, you know, the number of the website. And this is, I think I mentioned this before, I often set defaults that are not generally useful, right? N equals 8. If someone else were taking this code, they would wonder why I set n equal 8, right? It's a little bit strange. But if I know I'm just going to run it a couple times on this particular histogram, I might just set it as a default and leave it there, which is, you know, it's just the way I am, I guess. Okay, so then the first line is just doing exactly the same plot, right, as I did. The second one is playing with the axis a little bit. Okay, so I'll show you. Let me just run it, and you'll see what it's doing. There are a lot. Oops, lowercase I. Okay, so I did these blue tick marks that are uniform. Okay, so if those 14 points were uniformly distributed, that's where they would be. So I just stuck that on there. I could have taken away the axis. Maybe it would look a little cleaner if I took away the original axis, but I just stuck that on there. And I stuck it on there and made it blue. I made it a little bit thicker. So color is blue, line width is 2. And I did that axis without any labels so that it wouldn't label the numbers at least, because that looked really bad. Anyway, so it's taking a sequence from 1 to 720 with length equal to the length of that website's cache 500, right? So that's the number of things in that vector. And then I did this line, right? This line, this horizontal line, is what it would be if it were totally uniform. So again, this horizontal blue line is uniform. And then these light blue things are just one example of simulated data. So this last thing I did was a histogram, sample 1 to 720 with the length of the original data. Rep is false, so they're all different. And add is true, so it's adding a histogram onto the existing histogram. I put breaks 50 just to make it so that it would be split out. You know, the breaks is a suggestion to R, right? So if you put a big number, it's not going to actually do it. But it'll you know, it's doing essentially what it would do with these. So, and probability is true. That's to make it density scale also. Oh, yeah, so color is blue with transparency of 0.3. So they're kind of transparent. Okay. So anyway, if I run this function again, those values will change. Everything else will stay the same, but the simulated part will change, right? So you can kind of see if you run it a few times, you know, that sometimes things are clustered a little bit. Sometimes they're, like this one looks particularly even, I think. But sometimes they do end up being kind of clustered together or whatever. Okay? So anyway, that's, if I'm doing kind of data exploration stuff, that's sort of what I would do, just as playing around. If I wanted to see what, if that's a histogram that looks reasonably close to uniform, as a more advanced step, I might do your homework assignment, right? Your homework assignment is basically what, like, if I really wanted to answer the question, is this normal or is this uniform, I would do something like your homework assignment, which is a little more sophisticated. So this quantile plot, this is the function that I wrote in the writingfunctions.r code. It's from the 19th, September 19th. So you have this. It's pretty similar to what I would do if I were you for the homework, to do your plot. And then if I use that on here, you can see that it's pretty bad, right? So this is doing 0.01 quantiles. And you notice actually it's even worse than this looks, okay? Because it only goes up to 180 or something, and really the quantile plot ought to go up to 720, and you know, do that. So the way that I wrote this function before didn't take into account the theoretical range of x or y, so it's really just checking to see if it's uniform over the range of values that it actually has. Which it's not, but in fact, it's, like I say, it's even worse than that because there's nothing up there. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay. So just visually, these are steps that I might take if I was trying to answer the question of whether or not this follows the uniform distribution. Okay. Yeah?
Why did you do the 1 minus QS over 2 at the
end? Yeah, so that's a little bit... So it's a little bit arbitrary, but it gives you a little bit more accuracy at the corners, at the edges, to make the step to start not at QS but at, you know, half of that, which is a fairly common thing to do. So really what I'm doing then is these are not 0.01. It's not relevant for your homework. I don't really care. You could just do 0.01, 0.02. But a slightly better theoretical thing to do is to do 0.005, 0.015, 0.025, like that. Right? Because it just gives you a little more resolution in the corners. But it's not really. It's a little bit silly for this data set because this one only has 14 points. Right? But, you know, for a really big data set, that it's a little bit nice to get more resolution in the tails. Okay. So there are a couple more things that probably most of you have done this already, and you probably haven't done it this way, but this is a kind of a nice way to do it, and to make the I sort of wanted you to go through the experience of doing this in a way that would get it wrong, because it forces you to look at the data. So probably some of you, or if you've done the homework at all, have gone through the experience of a little bit of frustration at the first change and last change things, because some of them didn't have any changes. So when you attempt to get the first one and the last one, you have some issues. So I wanted you to struggle a little bit with that. But if you haven't done it yet, then I'm making your life a little bit easier. So this is code you could almost use, but the SApply the SApply LApply functions will take operators and not just functions. So the that bracket is considered to be an operator. And so what it does, if you do this, is it'll use that as an operator on that, and then it'll take an additional argument of 2, which for the, this is thought of as the extract operator. So the extract operator with an argument of 2 will take the second value from everything, right? So this is a nice way sometimes of getting, like, you know, the second value from every vector, or, you know, whatever it is you want to get. And you can, you know, you can do whatever arguments would ordinarily be used for that. So that's a nice thing to do sometimes, to use that apply mechanism to pull out things using extract. What do you think this does? Any guesses? That's, I think, easier to understand. What do you think it does if you're applying it to a data frame? So this data frame is just, you know, it's a 20 by 5. It's a data frame of a 20 by 5 matrix, basically. Yeah. So what was it? Someone said. Yeah. No. What's that? Yeah, it multiplies everything by 2. Right? It takes as input each of the vectors there, and it multiplies each of them by 2. Okay? So that's a little bit silly, because you could just multiply them all by 2. Right? But that's what it does, right? So I'll just show you this. So this data frame, right, is just, it's a 20 by 5. It looks like this, right? So it reads by column. So it's 1 through 20, 21 through 40, 41. So that's what the vectors are. And then, so if we take the second elements of each of those columns, that's like, right, 2, 22, 42, 62, 82. This you can, a list you can't. Yeah. Okay, so then this one is going to do just that, right? It just doubled everything. It's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, right? So, like, again, like, if I were going to do this, I would do that, right? I don't know if you saw that. I would just do df times 2. Would be smarter, okay, for this case. But if you're dealing with something that's more complicated, you might want to be able to, you know, do some apply with multiplication or some other arithmetic function. Okay. So let's see. I guess I don't have time for... Wow, that actually took a lot of time. So that's everything I wanted to say about homework 4. There were a couple of other things I wanted to say, but maybe I'll just... I'll say them really quick. And I'll tell you, you can look at them, because I think I don't want to spend more time on this. I think it's slightly interesting how random number generators generate random numbers. They're not really random. So you can look through this if you want. It's what's called a pseudo-random number generator. It has an algorithm that it essentially makes them unpredictable, at least. That sequences of random numbers in R are not truly random. They actually follow a pattern, but it's a pattern that's unpredictable. And there's quite a lot of theory behind this, actually, that whatever value you have, the next value can't be predicted, even if you know what the algorithm is. Okay, so the algorithm cycles through a large number of numbers in such a way that no matter what the number is you're looking at, you can't predict what the next one is, because there's so many different possibilities for what it could be in this large thing that it's cycling with through. Okay, so what it's doing is it's using mod arithmetic to create this. So it's basically taking successive multiplications of, so it's multiplying by successive numbers and doing mod arithmetic to get it back to a value that's in some range. And then you could divide by B to get a random number between 0 and 1 then. Okay. So anyway, x0 is called the seed. That tells you what large number you're multiplying A by, and then doing mod by B. So these are all, like, this method is like A and B are extremely large prime numbers, okay? So you're going to get like very, you know, random looking numbers out of this process, okay? And so here's some examples. Like if your seed is 17, that means you start with 17 and then you take, and A is 3, so you take 3 times the seed of 17, and then 64 is the mod number, then you get like this, you know, sequence of numbers. So the first 20 numbers you generate in this way are these. And if you plot the current one compared to the next one, with numbers that are this small, you see a pattern, right? So the numbers overall might look semi-random. If you just looked at, you know, if you look at the previous slide, look at the numbers, it looks pretty random, but actually there's a pattern. It's kind of cycling through different, you know, values. And these are between 1 and 64 because it's mod 64 arithmetic. I guess it's between 0 and 63 technically. But yeah, so there's a pattern here. If you use really big numbers, that pattern disappears, right? So now these are still small numbers compared to what R is using. But if A is 069, and B is 2 to the 3, you get this. So like no matter what the first one is, it's difficult to predict what the next one would be, right? So that's the idea. The set seed function allows you to start from anywhere you want, so you can reproduce a sequence of random numbers if you want. So if you want to like make sure that you use the same random numbers every time you write something, you can use the set seed function like at the beginning of your code to make sure that it does the same thing every time. So that's useful like if researchers want to like publish results and allow other people to reproduce exactly what happened, you can do that. So anyway, this is a quick example of code. If you set your seed equal to that, take runif, 3 random uniforms. If you take a different set of 3 random number uniforms, you get something different. But if you set the seed back, you get the same sequence. So these ones are the same. Right. Okay, so actually I went through everything I wanted to do. So you might have noticed, if you're looking at the lectures, that there's half of Monday's lecture that I never did, which is just kind of an interesting, very complicated simulation problem. So I don't know if I'll ever talk about it, but it's there if anyone wants to look at it. And there's a website that actually explains it pretty well. Okay, so Friday I'm going to talk about just basics of Unix and stuff like that, structure of Unix. And then next Monday I'm not really planning much of anything, maybe a little like review stuff. And then next Wednesday will be the midterm. A week from today, midterm. Okay.